If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to the Big Six Podcast. It's Michigan week. Riders of the Storm outside with the Doors song that's playing right now. We got a lot of rain in the Omaha and Lincoln area here on a Wednesday morning. Evan Bland, the Silver Tongue, Sam McEwen, me, the blowhard, so to speak, the one that always runs his mouth. That's me. Evan's much more loquacious than I am. Evan, how are you? Does it feel like a big game week? Does it feel like Michigan's coming to town? Feel like Nebraska football's got something on the line?
It does feel like that. I thought, Dylan Raiola set the tone pretty well on Tuesday when he kind of, I think he's projecting this game to be like the Colorado game last year. And we talked about that before. That atmosphere is one of the better home atmospheres I can remember. And I think I described it to you as like you go down there and you come back and you leave the field of play. And it's like you didn't realize how shallow you'd been breathing just because of how intense the pregame buildup was. And so I anticipate something similar to that, where there's just a little bit of extra something that Nebraska fans are going to bring, and everyone knows it's a big game, and it almost kind of feels like you're in the SEC this week. You got the CBS 2:30 Central slot, and obviously it's the first of many big games to come, but man, this just feels like if Nebraska's going to break out this year, this could be that coming out party. And they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt for blasting Akron and Houston Christian, but they could turn some heads this week. So I think people kind of feel that anticipation. I know I do. It's one of those weeks I think we'll look back on and say, however the season goes, there's going to be something about this game that's going to play a big part in that.
If Nebraska wins this game, it's a spotlight team for the entire month of October. You know, they have an opportunity to play Michigan State and Maryland and Minnesota and Northwestern all in a row. And in theory, they can beat all those teams and they become a spotlight team. They become somebody that you're sort of paying attention to out of the corner of your eye, a team that could creep up the rankings, kind of like they did in 2016 after they beat Oregon. If they don't win it, obviously, it's just going to be Nebraska could win four games in a row in November and it's still going to be prove it. And so there's always this dividing line between like what do you want Nebraska football to be? Do you want it to be a program that wins a lot of games and, you know, secures its place in a quality bowl and is able to do that by the time that November turns? Or do you want Nebraska to be a big deal with a capital B and a capital D? And this is the game this week where we're going to get in. We'll get into that just right now. I want to remind everybody to subscribe to the Omaha World Herald. You can always do that. We've got good deals going on right now. Just go to omaha.com/subscribe. You can always subscribe to us if you're listening to us on Spotify, you're listening to us on Apple. Thank you for doing so. But you can always listen to the full podcast on the World Herald, too. You can subscribe to the Omaha World Herald. Kudos to Nebraska volleyball last night. They beat Creighton in five sets. Good match. Very, very much back and forth. I know Nebraska would say that they didn't play their best volleyball in a couple of those sets. But the reality is, sometimes the opponent has something to do with that. I thought Nebraska and Creighton played really good volleyball for 2.5 hours. And then late in that match, Nebraska got a few hustle plays and they got a few, you know, whatever you want to call it, tip shots that were cleverly played and pulled out a five-setter against Creighton. They play Arizona, I think, this weekend. Don't know a lot about Arizona. Don't really feel like Arizona is probably one of the better teams in the country. And so I do think Nebraska is going to steamroll into Big Ten play undefeated, and they'll be the number one team in the country. And then from there, we're going to learn a lot about Nebraska volleyball because they're going to have a really tough Big Ten schedule. We'll talk more about Nebraska ball maybe next week during the bye week. We'll have an opportunity, or maybe even the week after. Let's get to football. So as we've kind of gone through the interviews this week, obviously the players talked yesterday, coordinators did too. Great interview from John Butler, really interesting. And then Matt Rhule on Monday, you know, Rhule kind of does what Rhule does. It's kind of over here, and he's talking about this, and he's talking about this. But I think there was a sense when you asked him about what can be accomplished here, that he understands that this is an important game. I think they're playing it down a little bit, but at the same time, I think they appreciate it. What does getting a win over Michigan versus other games in the past, what does that accomplish for Nebraska if they're able to pull that off on Saturday at 2:30 CBS?
Right. I mean, I do think one thing is it kind of knocks away another narrative. And I wrote about it Monday, but just that, like, the top 25 drought, to me, like, that's significant. If they beat Michigan, you're going to see on the bottom line for the next day, Nebraska snaps 27 game losing streak to AP top 25 teams. Like, that's, I think there's value in that. Like, you're looking for tangible next steps that the program can make. And they haven't had that big win since Oregon 2016. So, like, this is another tangible moment where you can say, yes, objectively, that is progress from what they've had before. And this isn't 2023 Michigan. I don't think anyone expects the Wolverines to contend for the national championship, but like, a win still takes advantage of the value of that brand. And, you know, we talked about it a couple months ago, like, just in terms of Nebraska, I think if you go to Minnesota and win, that's almost a bigger deal just because it's something they haven't done against a team they haven't beaten. But when you talk about the national perception of the program, beating Michigan absolutely is the bigger thing. And so you've got two iconic helmets, two programs that, you know, are have long been the focus of the sport. And it's something that gets people's attention outside the Husker bubble. It's something that would get recruits' attention. You know, if they go out and beat Michigan by a touchdown, you're probably going to get some commits out of that just because of what that would mean in that moment for so many people. So I think that part's interesting. And then the other thing is, like, the psyche of this team, I think, would be validated. All the culture talk that we've had in the offseason about this program being more focused on process than result. Like, if you don't wilt in this moment under the spotlight against this opponent, I think that does validate, like, that this team's focus is in the right spot. They proved it against Akron and Houston Christian, sort of on the other extreme, where you don't let up because of the scoreboard. I think if you don't shrink from the moment, that's another absolute sign that this program's got a healthy foundation and continue to build on it.
Yeah, in terms of recruiting, they have, I guess, the number one prospect in the 2027 class coming onto campus, Kennedy Brown, an offensive tackle from Texas, right?
I believe that's right.
Humble, Texas, Kingwood High School. As you know, they've had elite. They have pursued elite offensive linemen before, without a ton of success. We'll see how that goes. They tried last year to get the guy that went to Tennessee. He went to Tennessee. The number one prospect in this class actually has ties back to Nebraska. His mom grew up in Crete. He decided to go to Miami. Foster Sorrell back in the day visited here. He went to Stanford. So I'll be curious to see if Kennedy Brown is won over by what he sees here versus going to Texas, which has a lot more money. How do I put this? I think it's time for Nebraska to win one of these games, and I think this would be an incredible opportunity for them to do it. I think this is not an elite Michigan team for what it's worth. I also think there's probably more good teams right now than there were back in 2023. I don't know if Michigan 2023 wins the national championship this year, but, you know, I think there's an opportunity here when they've got a freshman quarterback who's relatively new to this process, didn't play great at Oklahoma. I know he played great against Central Michigan, but, you know, what does that mean? We're going to find out. I think there's just so much to gain. And this is one of those moments where if they lose the game, even if they lose it, you know, 24-20, we're going to go into the post-game press conference and like 89% of the questions are going to be like, boy, what'd you think about coming close? And What'd you like about what you did today? Like it's always the same. It's even if they lose, it's like, wow, you almost won. And like a lot of the media chatter is about that because the goal around here is just to kind of keep yourself in the game in terms of what you expect and keep things positive and don't piss anybody off. But this would be an incredible opportunity for them to what's the right word? Accentuate the positive and to take advantage of it and really elevate the program for the next month until you get to the next big one, which is probably USC. And it doesn't mean that they couldn't win four in a row, and they could go into the USC game 7-1. It wouldn't surprise me the least, actually, if they did. But there are moments when you've got to take advantage of the stage and the spotlight that you have in front of you, and this is one of those moments. You have a chance. You have a name team with the winged helmet coming in here. The last time I remember Nebraska having this opportunity and also the chance of actually winning it was in 21 when Michigan came here. Since then, I don't know that there's really been a game like that. Maybe, no, there really wasn't a home game last year like that. If they had beaten Ohio State last year, maybe that would have been the profile. But you kind of want those games to be at home. This is kind of that moment. It was like that in 21. We all felt it that night. They needed to get it done. They didn't get it done. We then praised them quite a bit for playing hard and playing well. And oh man, they were close. And then they lost their last six games of the year. So like it didn't it losing that game didn't mean anything. I mean, it didn't galvanize them and go, hey, we're close. We're close. Let's go win our last five. No, that didn't happen. It went again. And so that's not going to happen here. I think Nebraska will make a bowl and, you know, they could, and even if they lose on Saturday, they're probably going to go 8-4. But there's no time like these moments to elevate your program and take it to the next level. And again, the way the team is covered, 8-4 will be presented like 10-2 or 11-1. But I know the difference, and you know the difference. And this is a game where if they win it, the college football playoff is in sight. If they lose it, well, it might still be in sight, but we're not going to be talking about it for another one. And so this is an opportunity. And I understand that they're going to remain very locked in their process, very focused on themselves, very inward, very stoic. But Heinrich Harburg kind of broke the mold yesterday when he's like, hey, you know, that maize and blue M pops. He's right. God bless him for just saying what all of them are thinking. But don't think they can share with us because it's like it'll be some sort of no-hitter jinx or something. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know when we moved into this age. It feels like we moved into it actually quite a while ago, like a decade ago. We moved into this sort of stoic, nameless, faceless, process-oriented. We're still reading, you know, the same leadership books from 08 thing. I don't know. But it feels like it's still very much like that. And I get it. And I totally understand it. And I appreciate it. There's almost a religious component to it. But I appreciate Heinrich Harburg just saying, yeah, it's a really big game.
Do you feel like I mean, because they Nebraska said nameless, faceless. That was a Scott Frost line
That's what I
often
mean. It's
too.
been around for like 10 or 12 years. Yeah.
But I would say that there's a difference now from what it was under Frost. I always felt like when like I came to kind of roll my eyes under the Frost era when players would say, ah, we're going to treat it like a nameless, faceless opponent, because to me that felt like them saying, we're not going to get too high, we're not going to get too low. We're going to bury our heads against human nature. And okay, it's a big game, but I'm not going to acknowledge it. I'm going to be stubborn about it, even though I know it is. And I feel like it's more authentic under rule because it's not about saying don't get too high or too low. It's framing it in such a way that says we're trying to get better. This is the team against whom we're trying to improve. And we're gonna go that way. So like I don't think I didn't strike me as is speaking the company line the last 2 weeks when these guys are saying, yeah, we pounded Akron and Houston Christian, but like there are a lot of areas that we need to get better in. Like it felt that felt like they were being honest
Oh,
about
yeah.
that. And so like if this were 21, I think you'd get the feeling like Nebraska would kind of pucker up and know that this is a big game, but it's nameless faceless. We're going to not get too high. It really does strike me as a group that's just trying to get better, trying to chase perfection. And it just so happens that Michigan's the opponent. And so like you can acknowledge it and channel that emotion without making it too big. And I feel like that's kind of when you talk about the culture that's been put in place, like that's the reflection of it to me, is a game like this. And do they do what they do, or do they pucker and sort of wilt? Like it's such an interesting litmus test about just sort of the psyche and all the messaging that's been in there now for a few years.
Well, heretofore, with the exception of the Ohio State game last year, where I thought Nebraska basically put its best foot forward and fell short late, but it was understandable. No offense. It was understandable. They have, the best rookie receiver in the NFL right now was the guy that caught the fourth down pass on their final touchdown drive, and the best receiver in college football right now is the guy that caught the touchdown in the whatever second quarter to win the game. So Ohio State won the national title. But outside of that, I don't know that Nebraska's been really good against ranked teams or in big games
For
since,
sure.
that's what I mean. Like Colorado, that was that they were up to the moment, and they did. They played well there. They had four big games at the end of 23 where they needed to clinch a bowl berth, and they found a way to lose those struggle weird situations against Iowa, didn't respond against Indiana, obviously. And Michigan in 23, which, they were not prepared for what that game was going to be, and that happens. That's happened to every coach everywhere. So we'll see. I think their process is great. I mean, in terms of like the way they talk about it and the things that they're about and the ways that they want to get better. And I think Holgorsen has added a component to that that I think is really important of the way that Holgorsen looks at football is it's about players, not plays. And so like it's not about somebody getting open. It's about getting somebody the ball and letting them do something about it. And I like that. I think that's the way you got to play the game. Like, you're not going to get the perfect play all the time. Sometimes you need a guy. And I'm telling, this is my opinion, but this is a strong opinion I have. The reason that Emmett Johnson plays a hell of a lot under Dana Holgorsen is because Holgorsen knows that Emmett Johnson is going to make somebody miss. And Holgorsen likes that because you make one guy miss in college football, and it's kind of like the one bobble that a shortstop has in college baseball. If that shortstop bobbles the ball on an infield grounder, chances the guy getting to first are real good. And so, like, if Emmett can make one guy miss, he can make three guys miss. And Emmett does something almost every time he gets the ball that is a playmake. He does not run into people. He does not run up the backside of his lineman. And so I think the reason that Holgorsen likes him is because he's doing something after he gets the ball. Same with Mills, same with Barney. It's not just like well, he was open, so he caught it, and then he caught it, and then he was tackled. It's no, he was kind of open, he caught it, and made three guys miss. That's not the way that I think Holgorsen plays. And I like that. And then I think John Butler's super intriguing. Like,
He was good.
he's easily the most interesting coach on the team. He says some stuff in those pressers that when you take a half step back, just he kind of lays it all out. Like, our guys were looking at the quarterback last year, forgetting where to cover people. And then I was like, was that touchdown in the USC game, which I know infuriated the staff? It cost them the game, basically. They lost the game because there was a coverage bust. Butler was like, I said, was that because of the guys watching the quarterback? And he's like, maybe. It's like, okay, that was good. So there's things that they've obviously changed. And you tip your cap to Rhule because I think he understands they had to change those things and had to get better in some areas, and I think that they have. But you know, he's often been the underdog going into a lot of these games. Technically, Nebraska is the underdog in this game. And so like his record against ranked teams wouldn't be very good, because I'm guessing there's been a number of these games where he's been the double digit underdog, and you're actually not supposed to win those games. But his record against ranked teams would indicate that like there's still some room for Nebraska to grow, right?
Matt Rule's record, yeah, I mean 2-22, but like you
And a
got to
lot of
put
that
it,
again is at Temple.
yeah, you got to put it in context for sure. It was Temple and Baylor coming off of the scandal, and he had to rebuild both of those programs, and he's never been anywhere longer than 4 years to really get that momentum too. So for sure, you got to put it in context. But like we talk about what this game would mean for Nebraska, it would be equally impactful for Matt Rule, just because his two ranked wins in his career were East Carolina and Navy. And so you could, if you beat Michigan like that, what a moment that would be for him to pay off some of the rebuild that he's been putting in for 2 years as well. So like that's, I suppose that's just kind of what comes along with being a program builder, is you're not stepping into a great situation and just being able to roll. Like you're going to have to build up and to work back from that. So I think that's where he's at. And I thought it was interesting too, Sam, he made mention, I think it was this week or a few days ago, where he kind of had a little call back to his introductory press conference. And he said, you know, when I came here, I said it was going to be a slow burn, and it was going to be, you know, you're not microwaving the team. Like you're letting it simmer on the stove, and that's going to take a little longer sometimes. And you know, you get hungry and you just want to nuke it. I think he was a guy who put it on the pan or let it boil for a couple of years. And so now you're pretty hungry, and Nebraska's pretty hungry. And you know, we'll see how it goes. But like this is not sort of a just another win for them. If Nebraska wins, if Matt Rule wins, it significantly alters the trend that both of those parties have had for a long time. So again, it's just incredibly notable for national perception, for I think inner belief, as much as these guys are locked in on process. Like if you beat Michigan, if those think about those players, Sam, like a Henry Lutosky, who's just been pummeled by Michigan the last few years in his career. I mean, that 23 game, and they were pummeled in
They were
23. They
23.
got crushed. They really, honestly, they shouldn't have scored in those last two meetings, the one in Ann Arbor in 22 and the one in Lincoln. Like they easily could have been shut out both of those games. Then we got 18. Obviously, nobody's left from that. But Michigan, time and again, has put Nebraska in its place and said, we're up here, you're down here. And for that to be the team potentially that Nebraska can flip that narrative against, like it's powerful. It is.
It is. Let's get into the game itself. So we've talked around it a little bit. Now let's dive into it here pretty quickly. The dynamics are thus. Michigan's offense is a blend of what it had been under Jim Harbaugh and now their new coordinator, Chip Lindsey, who's been all over the place. He was at Auburn, he's at a bunch of other places. He brings a little bit of the air raid system, a little bit of tempo, a little bit more shotgun, a lot of ghost motion, orbit motion, lots of different things, a lot of eye candy for Nebraska to deal with. Anytime you're bringing guys across the motion and it's across the formation and it's receivers, you reserve the right to run jet sweeps and you reserve the right to run what I would call a traditional end around. You do that with the orbit motion that comes around the quarterback if he's in the shotgun. So you always have to be a little bit more honest on defense, slow to go, so to speak. And that's one of the things that you're going to run into. Bryce Underwood has shown the ability to run. John Butler said that Wonderwood only had two designed runs against Central Michigan. That's the same number that I had in rewatching the game. The other runs do not seem designed, but I will say this. He drops back, he puts his back foot in the ground on the back of his drop, and then he runs. Almost as if you get one read, two reads, go. And so it wasn't quite designed, but it was almost like, well, let's just see what happens if you run. And it seemed like it worked. We'll put it that way. And so there may be some circumstances in this game where he gets to the back of his drop and he's looking to run, especially if Nebraska's in man coverage and they got their backs turned to quarterback. That means that the pass rush lanes have to have integrity. Michigan's going to do a lot of the things that they do in the run game. They will run two tight ends. They're going to pull their guard and their tackle, or they're going to pull their center and their tackle around on power plays. Justice Haynes is a home run hitter. He's a very good back. He played at Alabama prior to this. I would compare him. I'm not comparing him to Josh Jacobs of the NFL. I am comparing him to Josh Jacobs at Alabama. Josh Jacobs at Alabama didn't get that many opportunities. He was behind, I think, Derrick Henry. Makes sense. But very similar. Haynes is a good player. And he is he's probably going to be a 1,400-1,500 yard rusher this year at Michigan. So sometimes people forget all that stuff, and they would have said, "Oh, you know, Donovan Edwards last year." But no, this Haynes kid is as good as they've had. He's as good as they've had. He's good. He's a home run hitter, and he can hit the long ball. He's tough. They don't have an elite tight end the way they did with Colson Loveland, and Colson Loveland gave Nebraska fits, especially in 22, and then in 23, everybody gave Nebraska fits. Their receivers are not big guys, except for Donovan McCulley, who played at Indiana, who I think played at Nebraska in 22. Remember that game? He didn't really play much for Indiana last year. It was a weird situation. McCulley's a big guy, and they'll throw to him, but their best receivers are smaller. And so I think Nebraska can cover. I think the question becomes run game. And can Nebraska do all the things that need to be done with Michigan's eye candy? And is Michigan going to run their guys? Are they going to run their receivers? Are they going to run Bryce Underwood? Are they going to have some wrinkles in play? So the diversity of Michigan's run game is a problem. Their play-action passing game is a problem. But they don't have the quality of receivers or tight ends that maybe they did 3 years ago. On the flip side of the coin, and certainly chime in here if you want, Nebraska's offense has to be able to sustain drives against Michigan's defense and also be able to hit the big play when Michigan presents a blitz that leaves their secondary exposed. And that will happen. Wink Martindale, formerly of the Ravens, now Michigan's defensive coordinator, is going to have some circumstances where even though he disguises a lot of coverages, there will be one or two moments in that game where what you see is what you're going to get. You're going to get a six-man pressure. You're just going to get it. You might even get seven. And, like, he'll bluff that a lot, and they'll pull out of it, and so you're not always going to know when that pressure is going to come. But one of those times, what Dylan's looking at pre-snap, he's going to get post-snap, and that's where Dylan's got to be able to say, okay, you know, I'm going to make a play. I know where I'm going with the football. If this happens. And the play call and Michigan's defensive play call match up. And it's like in the old Tecmo Bowl thing, like when you pick the perfect defensive play for their offensive play, only in reverse. And Nebraska's got to hit those moments. And then I don't know how Nebraska's going to run the ball. You know, somebody asked in Holgerson yesterday, it was a fair question about, well, how do you think the run game's going? And I think his reaction was positive, but it was like, it was muted.
Right.
Yeah, it was muted. I think he understands, he knows that Saturday is going to be a test that's a little bit different than they've had. Their linebackers are really good. Ernest Hausman anchors that, but he's not the only one. And they'll set good edges, and so Nebraska's going to have to find ways to run the football where they're really physical and tough. And Dylan's not going to fit into that. And you heard, what did Holgerson say? Somebody asked him, in a funky way, I think it was meant to be a question actually about Oklahoma's defense, but it was asked to Holgerson, and so it got flipped to Oklahoma's offense. And Holgerson was like, well, they ran their quarterback, and we don't do that.
Right.
So true. People who haven't watched that Oklahoma-Michigan game, let's be clear. Oklahoma's a good football team. John Mateer is why. Like, they had a good defense last year. Their quarterback play this year is really tough. And I mean that in the eighth grade middle school is my son's way of saying tough. The tears look good. He's real good. And I don't know if he's gonna stay healthy all year, but he's a dude. And they won the game because of Jabba too. Like, he was fearless running the ball against Michigan. And you can do that early in a season because you're probably not banged up. I don't know if he can do that against LSU 6 weeks from now.
Right.
But Nebraska's not doing that. Let's be clear. They're not running Dylan 11 times. And do they have a wildcat package? Not that I'm aware of, but maybe, I don't know. I don't think so. You know who I'd put in if they did? It'd be Ja'Cory Barney. Barney would be your wildcat because he could throw. He threw in high school. But I don't think you want to put Ja'Cory back there in that role.
You put Harbert back there.
Yeah, it's not the same. Because when you go to that wildcat thing, you're the goal is to run a big play. You could put Harbert back there, but that's to me, that's not it. You don't want to put Barney is the guy because you can break a 70-yarder if somebody goes with the sweep back and Barney cuts through, whatever. But I'm just saying, I don't think they're doing that. Oh.
No, probably not.
I'm actually a big fan of using the wildcat. I thought Sean Watson used it really well back in the day with Rex Burkhead, the Rex Cat.
The Rex Cat, yeah.
But we don't see that stuff anymore. And so I don't think we're going to get that. Nebraska's going to have to run the football without inserting Dylan Raiola into the equation. And that'll be one of the things I'm looking for. Run diversity. How do you run the football? You love Emmitt. You know, how'd they run the football against Cincinnati? They ran it okay. Not great. Like, if you ever wanted to pull Cincinnati out of that shell defense, they needed to run the ball better. If they run it for 200, well, then that third safety's coming down and saying, well, I can't stand back here anymore. They're kicking our ass down there in the front seven. But Nebraska never made him do that. They didn't run the ball. And so, like, one of the fascinating things about football is, like, how do you decide you're going to run it? What's the dynamic you're going to use to do it? Will you use your quarterback? What kind of plays will you use? Will you use your pass game as your run game? Do you have a screen game like Bill Callahan did? It functions like a run game. Is your quick screen game going to be good? They haven't used it a lot this year. They have a tunnel screen. Do they have a bubble screen? Do they have an off-block tight end play? Like, all these questions. And Saturday will be a tremendous test of what Holgorsen and Raiola together have kind of put as the menu for the restaurant. Mm-hmm. I think of each week as a new restaurant open. Like, the menu you have for your restaurant, each week it's pop-up. It's different pop-up. And, like, each week you have a menu. And each week, is that menu going to be good for the clientele? And this week's menu is really important, because not only from a selection standpoint, but from an execution standpoint. The menu you put out there, can you execute it? Can you provide really good play, really good food, whatever you want to call it, to torture the metaphor? Is the menu you put out there this week the right one, and can you execute it? And if you can't execute it, and it's obvious you can't execute it early, what do? You go five wide and say, Dylan, you know, play point guard. I don't know. I don't think that's a rules DNA. I don't. But you remember, because you were there when Callahan was there. Mm-hmm. When they couldn't run the ball, Billy C was like, well, all right, we'll just go shotgun and throw it 50 times. Because I know how to do that. And actually, Holgorsen does too.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that's kind of what they did against Cincinnati. It's like, oh, all right, we'll just throw the football there. And we know how to do it, and we'll move the football this way. I'll be curious to see if that's what Nebraska chooses to do. I'm like, okay, we clearly they're not going to let us run the football the way we want. So we're gonna put him in the shotgun, and we're going to let him deal. And Riley was like that too. He couldn't run the ball. Mike Riley wasn't afraid to throw it 60 times. Callahan wasn't afraid. Tim Beck only had one game like that. The one where Bone wasn't the coach. That was it. And Frost restrained himself. Although in hindsight, he probably shouldn't have. They probably should have just thrown it as much as they wanted, but he wouldn't. Those are my thoughts. What do you think?
I'm going to flip it the other way and say, to me, like, the matchup of the games is that fascinates me endlessly is Bryce Underwood against Nebraska's front seven. And will this be a situation kind of like Cam Linhart hinted at Tuesday, where because it's game four instead of game one, some of those rush lanes are going to be better. You're not going to have two guys in the same gap and all those sorts of things. Or is this something that's going to be lingering? I thought what Michigan's interim coach said was interesting when he was asked about Underwood and his run game. He said, he'll probably run some, but this is a guy who is an aspiring professional and his inclination is to be a pocket passer first. So like how Michigan balances that, if they feel like they can attack in a more traditional pro style way, or if they are going to just kind of let Underwood do what he wants to do and improvise. But like that matchup is interesting to me, not just for the Michigan game, but you can bet like every other Big Ten team that Nebraska plays this year is going to be dissecting that film and saying, okay, can their front seven stop the run? How do they handle that? How do they handle a running quarterback? Aiden Childs in a couple weeks, like they're going to be watching that. How does Nebraska do that? Like how that defensive front performs, I think is going to inform game plans all the way into November, just on what they can do. If Nebraska can't stop the run, a lot of this other stuff becomes secondary. So is that defensive line up for it? Who do they trust in the big moments? Like, does that defensive line rotation sort of shrink down a little bit to four or five guys instead of seven or eight in a game like this? I just think we're gonna learn a lot about what that front's made out of, and John Butler kind of touched on that. Like, that's the heart of your defense. You can have a great secondary, but if those guys up front can't contain the quarterback at least and stop those explosive runs, a lot of the other stuff doesn't matter. Really fascinating prove it game for a group that we've talked about with a question mark for a lot of months.
I think they're going to be okay defensively. We'll see. If Michigan comes out and says this is a, what do you call it, a line of demarcation game, we got to win this game. So part of this is the big picture question. Does Michigan really think they can make the college football playoff? Do they really believe that? And do they really believe it? Do they believe that this team is like 10-2 caliber and they can make the CFP? And if they make the CFP, they're like, oh man, next year we can win it again. If they really believe that, and maybe that changes the way they play the game. Is it about Bryce Underwood's trajectory by the end of the year? He's going to be a different guy. We're going to be up and running on the throw game maybe we go 9-3 this year, 8-4, but by the end of the year we're going to be a house on fire and we're going to be really good and next year is our year here. But if you think this year is a year, then you run it. You don't pull back the shift the car down. That's my opinion. That's not what you do. To me, you don't downshift the Ferrari. You just, no, we're going to run him and we'll run him 20 times. Because they did that thing at Oklahoma where it's like, eh, we're going to kind of play. It didn't work. It just didn't work. And I don't think you're going to win a bunch of games this year, 16-13. You're going to have to go win the games. And so I'll be curious to see that. That's one of the questions that I, and their interim head coach, Biff Poggi, I think would run him 30 times. I don't think that guy and Sharon Moore are necessarily on the same perspective. Although they're on the same page, and it was obvious that he said that they were. But I think if Sharon Moore was like, look, man, do whatever you got to do. Call whatever you got to call. Chip, call whatever you got to call. Run it. Run whatever you got to do in order to win this game. We got to win this game. And I don't care what we do. We'll run Bryce 25 times. They would probably run him a lot because I don't think Nebraska's pass defense is going to give up 300. I don't. I just don't.
But
So.
if they run Underwood 20 times, Sam, like to me, that's an encouraging sign if you're Nebraska. Like if you're forcing Michigan to do that, like the game for a decade, it's been Michigan pound the ball, play action, effective. They never had to do anything really that was uncomfortable. If they have to pound the ball with their true freshman quarterback to do it, like I think that's a good sign.
That's
And it
fair.
becomes whether Nebraska could stop it.
That's fair, Evan. That's fair. The last two times Nebraska has played them, their offenses were so primordial and ineffective that there was no way Nebraska was winning those games. And we knew that going when we went to Michigan in 22, It was the two of us, and I think it was a couple of journalists. Like, we all looked at each other and like, yeah, it's just going to be what it is. And then 2 years ago, we knew the same thing. They had Nebraska's chances of winning those games were almost non-existent because of their offense. This game will be different. So, like, Michigan over the course of four quarters, because you remember the 22 game, Michigan didn't even play that well. And they won 34-3, but they kind of puttered their way to it. They overwhelmed Nebraska over four quarters. But you get in a game where the other team can score 24 points, you have to decide very early, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to win this game? Because to win this game, we got to do some things that we may not want to do otherwise. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right, let's go to the picks. We'll get to Nebraska, Michigan here at the end. You ready?
Do it.
Let's do it. We'll start with this one. Arizona State of Baylor.
Arizona State.
Arizona State.
Think they'll learn.
Baylor for Sam. Bill Belichick against Scott Frost, North Carolina at UCF.
God, what a world we live in, isn't it?
What a wild, what a wild. What are you
I'm
going?
going. I'm going with Frost and Company.
Okay.
I think they're further along.
North Carolina for me, I don't know if UCF's offense is where Cross wants it to be. Iowa at Rutgers Friday night.
Iowa. Maybe
Iowa.
not comfortably, but yeah, I think Iowa wins that game.
But Iowa for me, I didn't mean to do that. Rutgers for me. A lot of
Ooh.
different ones this week.
Separation.
Maryland, Wisconsin.
God, this one is
At
history.
Wisconsin.
This is so interesting because I am not a believer in Wisconsin this year at all. They've
Yeah.
had injuries. It's I'm gonna say Maryland. And it feels really weird to say that, but it's more a reflection, I think, of where Wisconsin is than anything.
9-6, Wisconsin. Maryland's offense is pretty bad. Their defense is pretty good. Their offense is, they're converting like 35% of their third downs, and that's against some crappy teams. South Carolina, Missouri. I'm taking Missouri here. South Carolina's quarterback. Nobody knows what's going on there. So,
Yeah, Sam, Tigers.
Texas Tech at Utah. This is a big game.
Really interesting. Because it's a Utah, I'm going with the Utes.
I agree with you. Auburn at Oklahoma.
Well, we were talking up Mateer. I think he's the difference in this one too. It's at home. Sooners.
Jackson Arnold goes back home and loses Oklahoma. California at San Diego State.
Cal, after what we just saw last week, yeah. I'm thinking Cal's got a dude at quarterback.
SDSU.
Ooh.
It's gonna hurt. Illinois and Indiana.
Another really good one. It's sort of like an elimination game,
It
a
is.
little bit, like a Big Ten CFP. I had Illinois as my fourth Big Ten CFP team. I'm sticking with it. They haven't given me any reason to doubt I'm going Illini.
Indiana. Lots of differences this week. I love it. All right, Michigan, Nebraska. What do you got?
I think it's time. I think Nebraska finds a way. I think they're in a good mental space. It's in Lincoln. All the things that we talked about, I think they win a close game.
Taking Nebraska as well. Taking Nebraska as well. That's where I'm at.
All right.
We'll see. I don't know. All right, for Evan, I'm Sam. That is the Pick Six podcast this week. We'll be back next week in the bye week. Tom Chattel will join us in the bye week. We will recap the first third of the season, and that'll include a lot of reaction from Michigan. Thanks for listening.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10/1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.